Happy Halloween and welcome to Stoppage Time, the show that's as sensational as an Alex Morgan Halloween picture. Well, maybe not that sensational, but...
She definitely had the face down that all the gymnasts made, I'd say. That was pretty funny.
Yes, a Halloween edition of Stoppage Time. But before we get into all that, let's go over the last weekend's games, and boy, did we have some interesting ones. Let's start off at the Bridge. Man United 3, Chelsea 2, a game marred in controversy. Let's start off with the dive, the in air quotes dive. Yeah. First of all, I don't know if I can talk about this objectively, seeing as it involved Fernando Torres. Yeah. But Zach, let's start off with you. What did you think of the dive?
You know, it was clearly a foul. You watched the replay; it looked like a foul, you know, fast motion. But you watched the replay; he clipped his leg. But at the same time, it was a dive because it was obviously delayed. I think that's what the ref saw. But you know, it was a foul. You know, for it should have been for Torres, went the other way and ended up getting him a red. You know, even I don't see a second booking as a yellow for a flop right by the box. I mean, that, yeah, you're trying to make a bold statement as a ref, but man, it better be pretty clear cut if you're going to do that, because it changes the entire game.
No, I agree. I don't think it was card worthy. I think that's what sent the referee over the edge. It's obvious that there was some acting involved in his fall. Was it a foul? Yeah. Maybe the referee did not have a good position on it. I don't know. But in a game of that magnitude, I hate to see the referee take the game in his hands and significantly change the outcome of the game. I mean, it was a great game to watch, even with 10 on 11. You take him down to 9. Wow. I don't know.
What is a good solution to reduce diving in the Premier League? Because obviously, nothing's being done to curb it at all. I mean, you can give as many red cards as you want, but should we start imposing fines here?
Yeah, I like your idea of fines. And I think, you know, the referee this weekend was just kind of got a bit of bad luck. He may have been going for that, you know, I'm really going to show players I will card for simulation. In this case, he got it wrong. Or, you know, people are going to make mistakes. But that's I salute him for at least, you know, trying to card for that. But like you said, is it doing enough? No. So maybe they should enforce kind of an NFL-like policy for when they do such things and fine them a significant amount of money.
Yeah. I agree that whatever the steps you might take, they shouldn't be steps that would further influence the game. You know, in the outcome of game, negatively, it should be all on the players as individuals, something that, you know, repercussions after the game, you know, not one that's going to, you know, influence who is on the pitch. So, yeah, I think fines, you know, to what extent, I don't know, but that's, you know, that's something that has affected the NFL, you know, and illegal hits and blows to the head. So, yeah, I think that would be the right way to go, fines.
So that sent down Chelsea to 9 men after Abramovich getting a red card as well earlier, and then Chicharito getting the third goal, which, by the way, I don't think he should have celebrated like he did. I mean, you score a goal against 9 men, and then you try to act all cool in a goal that was clearly offside, by the way.
You know, on that note, I think something I'm more disheartened with is the offside calls that have been absent these last few weekends has significant. We'll get to this later, I'm sure, in the outcome of certain games, but significantly changing teams' performance. I mean, they're deciding games, and some very obvious ones. For example, over in Italy this weekend, you know, I think it was Juventus. Is that right? They keep their unbeaten record on what I would call a sick joke. They talk to the refs. He overturns the call. I've never seen it in my life, but I don't know. It's just kind of disheartening.
And now the Mark Clattenburg, the referee, is involved in a racism scandal, which, you know,
just something as Americans we can't really understand, because you know, we live in the dirty South where that kind of language is just, you know, as common as and, or, but, and thee. And for the police to take action like that, it's just something we can't understand, really. And, you know, players getting, you know, I guess, what do you do? Do you get, like, lip readers to watch the film? To, you know, how can you ever convict somebody? Is that...
Perhaps that was the most comical. It's not, racism is not comical, but when they replay the John Terry footage and they blur his mouth out, it's like, how do you... Do they have lip reading professionals that look at this video? I guess, but I don't know. I thought that's kind of comical.
So, United get the 3 points. Looking at the table right now, you know, Chelsea still hold a 1 point lead with Manchester United and City tied, with United ahead on goal difference. Given that result, you know, you still think it's probably going to come down to Chelsea or United in the end, because I don't think City has a chance.
If I'm Chelsea, I look at this loss and I take goods from it. I say, okay, we had some bad calls against us. Our captain's out. We get on the pitch with 9 men and still survive this. Wow, you know,
and they almost had a chance to score.
And they almost scored. I would say Chelsea is absolutely at this point in the season my title winner, and it's because I really liked what I saw against United. And here's the thing: they went down to 9 men. It's not like they were completely just helpless. They still, you know,
they were still making runs. It was, there was an offensive game to a team that was down 2 men, which I thought was unbelievable. Especially playing against a team with caliber Man United. They were very much in that game, and, you know, without Chicharito, the goal poacher, that, you know, would have ended as a draw. They had plenty of chances toward the end of that game, so, you know, that's kind of a, I would say, at the end of the game, there'd be a positive to take away from that. Yeah, they should have won the game. They were in total control, and a negative for Man U as far as, you know, why didn't we score more? Why didn't we dominate? We have to take advantage when we're, you know, when we have that much of an advantage.
A final note on this game. I don't know if the refs have are part of the Johnny Evans fan club. This guy's a punk. You know, we already saw this in the Man United Liverpool game where he went in a 50-50 tackle with Jonjo Shelvey. Johnny Evans getting off free while Jonjo Shelvey sent off. Now this, I don't know. Eventually, his luck's got to come to an end.
It's a Man U thing, man.
It surprises me because in America, in the NFL, NBA, we don't say, oh, this one team always gets these calls. It doesn't seem like we do.
Because it doesn't happen.
But in England, it's everywhere with this United stuff, and I don't know. It's something to look into, and I don't know what the FA should do about it, but it's something that is very, you know, prevalent over there.
Agreed. Let's move on. The 219th Merseyside Derby, ending in a draw after Everton came back from a 2-0 deficit, and Liverpool's game-winning goal from Luis Suarez was disallowed. First of all, I think it was a game of two halves, really. Actually, you know, I guess you could say it was a game of one half. Great call by me there. Watching the game with Liverpool getting the 2-0 lead, you know, that's still a dangerous lead to have. I was still not feeling confident at that point. I don't think any Liverpool fan, given, you know, the past three seasons, would have felt confident. Maybe with a 3-0, yes, but a 2-0, no. And we saw that lead go away with Osman getting the first goal, which, you know, Brad Jones with a bad punch. I think Pepe, had Pepe been in there, I think he would have made a better decision. But, you know, Everton came back, and I guess we're going to try. Well, I don't know if we'll be objective in this. I did not think Liverpool deserved to lose. I think, you know, Devin mentioned it earlier. Just, you have those games where you're like, oh, there was a call that, you know, could have ended it. But when it's something so blatantly dumb, it just really gets you mad. Maybe this was, you know, karma from last year when Rodwell got sent off. Zach, your thoughts?
You know, I'm gonna start by saying there's no possible way for me not to be objective here.
Okay,
I'm
gonna. That's a disclosure.
Yeah. It's absolutely. You know, it's the first thing that comes to mind is last year's the Rotwalt Red. It's funny how it pretty much equally screwed over Liverpool towards the end of that game. But I will say, that was the only goal that I thought they should have scored. The Gerrard foul, free kick, was not a foul, and the first goal, Suarez, the Bane's own goal, was most bizarre. The ball wasn't going anywhere near the goal, and it hit off his right inside through the legs. It was bizarre. I thought we controlled possession. We had more chances, more corners, more shots. I thought we controlled the game on the stat sheet. I thought we should have came away with the win, especially at Goodison. But, you know, more than anything, what really sticks out to me is our need of a center midfielder that's not Phil Neville. Neville, you know, God bless him, he's our captain, but it's about time for him to hang up the boots. You could see it. His pace is just, you know, he's a step behind everybody now. We really are missing Darren Gibson. We need him fit this next week. We thought possibly he was going to come back, but he didn't. We need someone else to help out Flaney in the midfield. And that's hopefully we get to January. That's what we're looking to buy. But, those are really my thoughts.
You know, I thought...
Wait, I'm not done yet.
Well, we'll get to what I think you're going to talk about. Okay. You know, going into this game, I was worried with Glenn Johnson. He was a late scratch. So Andre Wisdom, 19-year-old, getting the start right back. He's had some impressive appearances for Liverpool this season. But given the fact that Pepe Reina was out and Brad Jones was in there, not to mention, you know, Lucas is going to be out for a while. Fabio Barini's out till the new year, maybe. Martin Kelly. The list goes on and on. There were some question marks. I enjoyed Brendan Rodgers' substitutions in the second half. He took out Suso, brought in Shelvey, because Suso was not giving Andre Wisdom any help on that right side. Shelvey getting in there definitely helped out and probably prevented a third Everton goal. You know, I was really worried in the first half that, you know, it looked like Everton was going to get a third goal. Devin, how about a view from someone not supporting the Mercy side teams?
I think it's exciting time to be either an Everton or Liverpool fan. What makes me sad for Liverpool is if, me personally, I look into my crystal ball here, and I see Liverpool...
Halloween edition.
Yes, Halloween edition. And I see Liverpool, they're pulling it together. They have some players missing, but they're pulling it together. I think they finished we're not even close to the end of the season, but I think they're on track, and if I'm a Liverpool fan, I hope it's not too late to challenge for a fourth or fifth spot, because I think they're really going to start stringing together consistent runs. And then I look at Everton and I say, you know, what David Moyes has done in the last 2-3 years is incredible, because, you know, you have to think about relegation 3 years ago for them, and they survive it, and now, you know, the sky's the limit. I'd like to see Liverpool get healthy and Everton buy in January and see both these clubs finish in the top half.
Top half. Wow, thank you for those high
thank you.
There.
I'm glad we don't finish 11th. Zach,
until we get to Spurs.
Zach, are you missing Tim Cahill at this point?
You know, like we said, you know, we're missing someone in the midfield. When we sold Cahill, you know, I thought it was kind of a best for both worlds type of thing. But at this point in time, you know, he's not the offensive powerhouse he used to be. But we could use his leadership, and we could use just another body, period, in the midfield, and someone who has experience there. There are rumors floating around about maybe a loan after the MLS season's over. So, you know, I wouldn't rule that out, to be completely honest with you. First day he took the podium there, he said, no, wouldn't be opposed to it. So there's still that love and, you know, no hard feelings over that transfer. So, I could see that happening. More than anything, I think what is on the mind of Evertonians is, you know, will Landon Donovan come back? That would be huge for our midfield.
But I got to ask you, as an Everton fan, does it not concern you the lack of goals towards the end of Cahill's tenure there?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, really only the last half of his second year after his injury. First half of the year, his last year, he was actually leading the league in goals. So that's not it. Period. No, he was just, you know, the guy's getting into his mid-30s. There's just not much time left on the clock at soccer is a sport where, you know, you have to hang it up when you start losing a step, especially this level. I mean, that's why you see, you know, the elite players that used to be go to the MLS, because it's a step behind, essentially.
Yeah, question you guys. Do you guys think it's insulting to see players in England towards the end of, you know, I'm getting worse, I'm deteriorating, I'm going to go to MLS? Do you guys think that's...
I don't think it's insulting.
I think, I don't either.
I think it's representative of how young the sport is here. And I think it's good for us.
Oh, yeah. Ten years ago, these players wouldn't have come here.
Not a chance. Not a chance. It's you know, and hopefully it progresses from, you know, the ones who are just, you know, a little bit old but used to be, you know, the best in the league, turn into, wow, you know, am I going to sign another contract for really clever? Am I going to go, you know, give it a shot overseas and, you know, in a sport that's growing and on, you know, media-wise and... ticket sales wise, there's more and more people showing up to the game, so
right.
Yeah, I wouldn't consider it an insult at all.
Right, and you know, the players, you know, a lot of the international players love living in America and getting to visit these big cities.
Yeah, and that, and I think, you know, another just reason I love Landon Donovan, he's such an ambassador for the game here in America. You can look at his success overseas and say, well, I can play well in the MLS and not be a step behind the competition overseas or internationally. Because look at how well he blends in at Everton, and one of the best leagues in the world. Was player of the month both years he's been there. So, you know, it's not something that international players can look at and say, well, it's going to slow me down, because it is growing, and the competition is growing, and the talent is growing.
Let's go back to a moment in the Liverpool match. After Liverpool took the 2-0 lead, courtesy of Luis Suarez, Suarez proceeded to the sideline and gave a little dove towards Mr. David Moyes.
A little dive. You know, obviously all week there were a couple interviews that Moyes gave regarding flopping, and obviously subliminal message directed at Suarez, who is the greatest diver of all time, a poison for the game, an absolute cancer, a brain tumor, terminal, just awful human being. Yeah, you know, he did hear it, and he just goes to show that if players hear those messages, they can be motivated, especially in a big game like that. God, it was such an emotional game for both sides. I'm just glad there wasn't a riot and nobody died afterwards. You know, it just shows how he has zero class. I wouldn't have any class either if I looked like a llama. Went straight to Moyes, dove right in his face. Almost killed the front row with his front row of teeth protruding into the stands. You know, and then they came back and tied it up, which I was glad. I really wish we would have won that game, just in spite of him, if nothing else. Yeah, I just, if he had a season-ending injury, I wouldn't blink. I wouldn't feel one tear of sorrow. And he's really the only person in the game I can say that about. I wouldn't even say that about I wouldn't even say that about John Terry. So, here's
Balotelli?
No, he just doesn't have the intelligence to hold back. I don't think. I think Suarez does. I just think Suarez is just a jackass. So, that's my two cents.
You know, all season we've seen, you know, even when Suarez doesn't dive and there's a legitimate call for a penalty, he doesn't get him. So I think this is that dive was a way of, you know, relieving some frustration. And, you know, when he does all this dumb stuff, you know, as a fan, you know, I just get, you know, frustrated at him.
Somebody threw a coin at him. I would have been that guy.
Yeah, I think that was the same guy from the Craig Bellamy game. So Bellamy and Suarez in the coin throwing club, but you know, he's the one player that, you know, everybody just loves to boo, and Liverpool fans, you know, just can't get enough of him. I want to go back to Everton's recent form. They had a couple draws. I believe this marks their third draw in the Premier League. Are you worried as an Everton fan?
No. You know, we'll see how they respond against Fulham, a team that we should beat at home, I would say. I'm not worried. If our off days are draws, I would consider that a good thing compared to, you know, recent years and the way we've started out. We're a second-half team, and for us to be as high as we are at this point in time, I'm still very pleased.
Who's your man of the match for Everton?
That's a good question. I would probably say Osman. Got things going with that goal. Did some good things on the wing. Coleman played well. Coleman was, you know, he's not a big goal scorer, but he is somebody, to quote Faust. He's young, he loves the game, he's quick, and he, you know, runs down the wing. I think he creates a lot of chances. He's fun to watch, and he's still young, and it'll be fun to watch him develop, and hopefully, because he's also been injury-ridden the last couple of years. If he stays healthy all year, I could see him moving into a starting role to be an everyday guy.
I've got to give mine, obviously, to Suarez. I mean, he's...
You want a just total man of the match? You know, if you're going to look in the stat sheet, yeah, I'd give it to Suarez, too. Obviously, he scored two goals, maybe three.
And even, you know, David Moyes, in the post-game interview, he said, you know, he kind of laughed at the dive, but he said, hey, I probably would have done the same thing if I were him. But I think this, you know, Suarez's consistency right now is coming into his own, helping Sterling out. Sterling's progressing.
I was surprised Rodgers left Sterling in for the second half. Arguably could have been sent off towards the late end of the half there. I would have thought, you know, with him being the youngster he is, I would have thought he would have went with somebody else.
Well, they had Suso also, and Suso has had less experience than Sterling, so I think Rodgers wanted to keep Sterling in there since Sterling, you know, had a good game against Man City. I think overall this was a positive for Liverpool. They came off a big Europa League win against FC Anzhi, Samuel Eto'o's team, and they really needed 3 points there, and that kept them alive in the Europa League. And so I think, you know, they've got a game tomorrow, Halloween, against Swansea, Brendan Rodgers' old team. You'll be excited to see what lineup he pulls out there. Let's move on really quick. Arsenal 1, QPR 0. Another lucky win for Arsenal. Let's just call it that. Arteta scoring late in the second half. And, you know, and after that, on Tuesday, they barely won a Capital One Cup match against Reading, 7-5. One of the most ridiculous games we've ever seen. Needed to bring on, you know, Giroud in there. They started some young players, but they needed to bring on the big guys to get a win in the Capital One Cup. You know, I feel like Arsenal always does this. They, you know, have some terrible games, and, you know, the fans are calling for Arsene Wenger's head. But then the second half of the season, they always do something, and they're in the top four again, playing the Champions League. Is this not ridiculous?
Yeah, it's classic Arsenal. And I think, I don't know, kind of where I'm at with it. If they're okay with finishing fourth every year, keep Arsene there, I guess. But if you want to win trophies, I'd like to see a change at the helm. You know, look at Spurs. Redknapp had done just absolute magnificent things for that club. Daniel Levy, the owner, takes a gamble and just fires the most successful manager in the last decade, and we'll see where that lands him this year. But I'm just saying,
trophy count?
No. As far as, you know, table finishes,
fast food, gross fast food bot.
But so I think with Arsenal, sure, keep doing your thing and averaging fourth and whatever every year, or change, make some changes and see where that takes you.
You know, they're another team that has the funds to compete for the top spot every year. Anything out of the top four is a meltdown. You know, anything that's not the top spot should be a disappointment. Just begin with QPR. QPR, continues such an unlucky run. They're much better than last place, and I still don't think they'll get relegated. You've got your full squad out there, and you barely won in, you know, the late minutes of the game with the former Evertonian, the greedy Spaniard himself. If I was an Arsenal fan right now, I wouldn't be too pleased with our form. The Reading game was absolutely ridiculous. I think Piers Morgan's tweet kind of summed it up. Just, you know, I give up. What to expect of this team? There's no telling. To come from 4-0 down and score 7 goals, that just blows my mind. I've never seen anything like that. There's no telling what to expect as far as the rest of the season, where they'll end up. You know, kind of like last season, they just kind of snuck in there and got that Champions League spot. So I could see the same sort of thing happening. I don't know if I'd put them in my top four. As a matter of fact, I know I wouldn't at this point in time, but I could see it happening.
Currently sitting in sixth. Now it's another game that went 1-0. Manchester City getting the win over Swansea. Tevez getting the goal. Not City's best, but they still got the win. You know, this team, you know, I thought Joe Hart was great. You know, Michu had a couple chances to score. Joe Hart, you know, saw none of that, you know. I thought their defense was solid. Michael Richards is going to be out, though, for about 4 months. You think this might be a big-time blow to City, Devin?
Not with a team with that much depth. And if I'm a City fan, I'm excited because we have yet to play our best soccer, is what I'm saying, if I'm a City fan. And, you know, these, I would call these lucky results they're getting right now because they're not playing that well. But what they're doing is keeping themselves in the title talk until they do get to where they play their best soccer, and that's very exciting if I'm a City fan.
But given the City team now, Zach, you know, they're not playing Manchester City or Manchester United this week, but if they were to, do you think they would have a chance?
After watching Man U play Chelsea, I would say, yeah, they have a chance. That was a poor performance from them. I think I agree with Devin. They're not playing their best soccer right now. They're not in form. So I'm with him that it, as of right now, their spot on the table, the way they're playing, I'm very pleased. And when they do turn it on, when they do get hot, they're going to be right up there pulling away from the rest of the pack, I think. I would say they'll probably get second behind Chelsea, and I would say Man U finishes behind them, honestly, at the end of the year. If I'm a Chelsea or if I'm a City fan, I'm not worried at all. I think they have the depth to do it. Will they miss Michael Richards? Yes, absolutely. But, you know, they have the goal-scoring power to, you know, to take a few hits on defense, especially when you got a world-class keeper like Hart back there.
One thing, you know, I think that's going to help them in, you know, possibly competing for that title is the fact that they're probably not going to make it out of their Champions League group. They just lost to Ajax. It's looking pretty grim. It looks like Borussia Dortmund and Real Madrid are going to advance in that group. So.
Well-deserved, I might add.
Right.
That leaves them with one thing to play for, and that's the title again. So, yeah, that I think that will definitely influence that.
Right. All right. Last game we want to get to. Tottenham, the Spurs, getting a 2-1 win against Southampton. Nothing too hard for Spurs this week, I would say. You know, Bale and Dempsey getting the goals against a, well, let's call him a terrible Southampton squad. Devin, satisfied?
Yes. New father Bale is back.
Yes, congrats to Bale and his...
Yeah, he's been dating that girl forever, so it's good for him.
What did they name it, by the way?
I have no idea. I believe it was a girl. I don't know the name.
But they named it Amy after the monkey from Congo.
Right. No, that's incorrect. But besides his personal life, it was good to see them get a result here. You know, watching this Spurs team, one thing I see that I didn't see last year is the depth to rotate certain players in and out. Some of our younger players have developed, like Livermore, and then you have those players that have been maybe not their best at times under Redknapp, like Lennon really flourishing this year. Dempsey, another, like, you know, we classify as poaching goals, I guess. And then I think the most pleasant surprise this season has been the coming of Jermaine Defoe. He looks like a re-energized striker, someone who is going to be in the England starting lineup, possibly, for the World Cup if he keeps playing like this. And then also some consistent, reliable players are hurt. Jonas Kabul, Benoit Suakato, both still hurt. Scott Parker, oh my gosh. I mean, if I'm a Spurs fan, the best is yet to come also, and it's always good to get a road win no matter who you're playing.
Zach, Tottenham currently sit fourth right now, 1 point above Everton.
Yeah, they have. I mean, their schedule has been a cakewalk thus far. My biggest worry, you know, is their age. Can Tim Duncan, can Ginobili stay healthy? That's going to play a huge role down the stretch.
Tony Parker.
Yeah. No, but on a serious note, them and Everton really are in a dead heat for this fourth spot, I think, this year. And we'll see that their head-to-head matchup, who's going to come away with those points, I think is going to actually have a huge role in deciding who's going to get that spot this season.
I don't know if it'll decide who gets a spot, but it will definitely be significant in the fact that they're competing for something significant this year against each other. It's not just another game. And I think it will send a message. Maybe this team has the lead, you know, advantage over the other, and I don't know. They've always played pretty good games in previous seasons, splitting sometimes with one apiece. But it'll be interesting to see this year with especially with the change in lineups over, you know, this year. So
yeah, no gentleman's agreement this year. There's no dirty Redknapp to shake Moy's hand, look him in the eye, and then line to the bastard. So
I will say I will miss Lewis Hall.
Yeah, you spent a lot of time at Tottenham. That'd be close to your heart.
Great goal scorer.
Devin, who's your man of the match? You know, I thought, you know, obviously Bale's playing tremendously. It's always, as Americans, good to see Dempsey getting on the score sheet. William Gallus also played well.
I'm going to go with, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson and Christian Bale. I'm a big fan of Christian Bale, and he would have been my man of the match.
I think it has to be William Gallus. He's one of those guys in the preseason. He was kind of overshadowed by bigger names. Well, it turns out he may be one of our most consistent defenders this year, even though he had poor clearances that gave Chelsea a win a week ago. I hope he continues to play well. I don't know if he'll stick around when Jonas Kabul gets fit because he is younger and definitely
not with the club.
No, stick around as in see the pitch in the starting lineup ever again. But he has been our captain for the majority of the season, so more power to him. Glad he's playing well, and I think he's a man of the match.
Do you bench your captain?
Well, with the Spurs situation, you absolutely say there's no diehard captain on the team with Ledley King's retirement. I'd actually love to see Scott Parker take the captain's band for the rest of his career at Spurs, but I don't know. We'll see.
To get your thoughts on this whole slow loris Bradford dilemma at this point in time. He had another Friedel start. What do you think about that?
Well, honestly, I like it. I look at it from Brad Friedel's perspective. I've been playing lights out for 2 years now, and some little Frenchie comes in trying to take my spot. Well, what have I done to lose that spot? Nothing. Hugo Lloris is the future of Spurs in between the sticks, but you know, let Brad Friedel stay there till he messes up. And if I'm Friedel, I'm very disappointed in AVB breaking my streak, my Brett Favre-ish streak. But the streak's over with, so whatever at this point.
The next question has to be, will Brad Friedel send a picture of his penis to one of the
Jen Sturgeon?
Press release girls with Spurs?
No, I'd say Brad Friedel's in a different class than Brett Favre as far as sexting.
You know, when I look at Brad Friedel, I see the fact that he used to be an American, and he, you know, went to the extent to change his accent.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah, Benedict Friedel is my personal nickname for him, so I could very well see him sending a picture of his penis to another woman that isn't his wife.
I don't know if you've ever read books on accents, but it is shown they change over time. If you are random enough, they're not innate, if you will. They are developed.
You know, if Friedel and Gallus combine age older than the entire Liverpool squad, that's a fact. You know, and if Gallus ever wants to go to the MLS, he can get his AARP card.
There you go.
It'll be great for
Which
him.
He has stated he is interested in MLS.
Send them all over.
Devin,
we'll be glad to have him.
Devin taught him to have a Capital One game, Capital One Cup game tomorrow. How serious are they taking this competition?
Very serious, especially with the exit of Europa. Definitely a possibility now. So, and we have depth this year, so I'd like to see us be competitive in all competitions. Sure, you have injuries, Adebayor, some defenders, but we have enough depth that I think we can seriously be competitive in all competitions, and I don't think AVB will make Arsene Wenger-like statements and say we will not try to. I think that's ridiculous, and I look for that to be a great game with a significant change in our EPL lineup.
Devin Cook and Zach Smith with your Premier League roundup. I just realized I didn't introduce you guys at the beginning of the podcast. There you go. All right, let's move on to some of the hot topics in world soccer right now. Let's start off with a quote from Steven Gerrard. This was in a press conference this week regarding the Everton game. Zach, this is your first time to hear this. So it'll be great to get your instant
Sorry,
thoughts.
Devin just spilled sake all over my crotch.
Sorry. I thought the glass was empty.
Yeah, I bet you did.
This is from Steven Gerrard. There was only one team who came into the derby trying to play football. Everton are effective because they have some big physical lads on the team and are very direct. They are effective, but the only team who tried to play football was us. Everton are not better than us. I thought we stood up to a team that are very similar to Stoke. Every single time they got the ball to their keeper, it came in long. We had a young, small team, and they were all men and stood together. We deserved the win.
Obviously, that's the first time I've heard that quote. And before that quote, I held Steven Gerrard in high regard. I no longer do, and he's every bit...
for that one quote.
Yeah, I mean, that's ridiculous. He went on and on about, you know, that's absolute bullshit. This is a team that finished higher on the table than you last year, will this year... You know, it's the poor club. You have the funds, you have the talent to be better than this team every year. And because you are the team that plays shit football, you finish on the bottom half of the table. Please, Steven, enlighten me on what do you have to show for things like this? Yeah, you had one goal disallowed. You were not the better squad. I don't understand what – are you referring to our defenders, that they're taller than your offense? If that is the point you're making, congratulations. That means nothing. Distin's a big guy. That's the only thing I can think of here. We weren't playing football. I don't understand that one bit. What is playing football, Steven? Define football for me. Is it – you know, do you have to be down on all fours with a llama mouth flopping in front of the opposing team's – crowd and coach making an ass of yourself, or is it, I don't know. You just explain to me what he was getting at here. Why throw these insults, you know, at a club who really has shown no disrespect towards your side, has done nothing but play better football than you. I don't know if that's just, you know, a whiny Steven, hi Steven voice.
You know, I don't know the question that was asked to generate this sort of response, but, you know, I think he's just labeling them a long ball team, which I don't know if you obviously don't agree with.
What is long ball team?
You know, he said every time they got the ball to their goalkeeper, it came in long. He said they're very similar to Stoke.
I really don't understand that because we score, you know, the majority of our goals off of headers and runs down the wing. So, no, they're not. Our goals are not all assisted by Tim Howard. Osman's goal was about as legitimate as it gets. Long ball, you know, Naismith's goal was probably 2 feet away from the net. So, you know, yeah, obviously it's just frustration. He wanted to get the 3 points, but you're the captain. You are the face of Liverpool. Don't run your mouth like a little whiny baby. That's despicable. And you would never see anyone from our side run their mouth like this. It's really the main difference between the two clubs. Egotistical has-beens, and you've got the poor people's club, the up-and-comers, and the people who have waited so long for glory and are on the fringe of getting it, and well-deserved.
Devin, do you have any thoughts on this quote?
Yeah. Steven Gerrard couldn't be any more correct. No, I'm joking. I just think he was trying to show his Liverpool pride here and reiterate that this is a rivalry and I'm on Liverpool's side. I will live and die with this club.
You don't think he was wrong to say it like that, being the person he is for the face of that club?
I think it was out of character.
Yeah, I do too.
And do I think Everton could be compared to Stoke? Not necessarily. No. I think he was clearly upset about the result of this game, and maybe for once in his career, he took it too far.
I don't think, like, if you're a Stoke fan, what does that mean? What do you mean they're like Stoke? The fact that we don't have the money to, you know, to buy out third world countries and have more money than the GDP of Zambia. It's just, you know, I don't understand that.
Yeah,
I'm absolutely just.
It was out of
mind
context. You know, I think. I think obviously they asked him, "Do you think the result was fair?" And that was his long.
He said the only team that showed up that playing football today. It's like Mancini's comment. The only when Rodwell transferred. I don't understand where people are going with this.
Maybe he's playing psychological games with Everton.
Possibly.
And we saw what happened. You know, when Spurs scored those goals. I hope. Next time that comes back to bite him in his already high-pitched voice cast.
I would like to see how Gerrard interacts with Suarez outside the clubhouse because I think they're two very different players.
Well, have you been
born together in being Liverpool?
Have you been watching? Did you watch the last episode?
I did not, so I'm not up to date on it. But I'd like. I've
I
seen
was too busy watching beating Liverpool,
which did not air on Sunday. you know, the series concluded on Sunday. I you know, obviously as a Liverpool fan, I loved it getting to see the club.
Do you think Liverpool's poor results cut the series short? Did they always plan to end it this short?
Yes, it was only scheduled to be 6 episodes, and the final episode chronicles the match against Man City, which is a draw, and the transfer day deadline. Yeah, it was interesting to see. You know, you really didn't get to see everything that went on in the transfer window, but obviously this is a partnership between Fox Soccer and Liverpool, and they're obviously not going to try to make Liverpool look bad, or else Liverpool wouldn't have agreed to it. Maybe in the future we'll see something more, you know, hard-hitting, a la Hard Knocks. This definitely wasn't a Hard Knocks. I thought the production value was great.
Maybe Steven Gerrard could direct being Stoke and Everton, and we could really make it critical.
I'll say this. I think they did a great job with it. You never felt a sense of, it was very, I don't know how to say, unbiased. It was good television. It never tried to defend them overly or make them look bad overly. It was good television.
Yeah, it wasn't objective. It was more of a, this is what life as a Premier League club is like, and it happened to be Liverpool that they were filming just because of, you know, the tradition at that club, and it's a well-known club even for, you know, non-soccer fans. Everyone knows about Liverpool. So I was glad that something like this would air in America. I think it's good for the sport, and I think, you know, where they go from here. Make another one of these documentaries. I don't know.
I think the plan is, you know, they're hoping to get another Premier League team involved in something like this. And, you know, I think if another Premier League team was offered this chance, I don't see any reason why they should turn it down because I think it'll do nothing but boost your audience in America.
It's the same sort of show. Kind of, you know, non-objective. They can do nothing, but it's free publicity for you.
Every club is making this transition, I feel like, to market the United States in some way. Tottenham today signed a deal to put several hundreds of thousands more jerseys in retail stores.
For that Tottenham fan on the go?
Yes, and so I think every club in the EPL will start moving towards this marketing scheme over here.
Yeah, and I think there's a better way to market than to buy American players. And you saw, you know, Spurs did just that. And, you know, if you're a U.S. soccer fan with, You know, if you're not as diehard as, you know, an MLS fan in a big city, you kind of do what we do. You find Premier League club with an American to follow. That's, you know, how I originally came to love Everton. So, you know, and you see how that is. I'm, you know, 100 times the fan that I was when I originally, you know, started watching the club. So it grows on you, and you've got to find a reason to identify with the club, and what better way for Americans than to root for an American. So,
question for you guys. As far as marketing and deals go, Spurs are denying, but it's been talked about very heavily, that when they sent Luka Modric to Madrid, that they signed a deal that gives Spurs players first bid on their players they want to leave, and vice versa, such as Gareth Bale, if he was to go to a Spanish club, Real Madrid would get first chance for him. Do you guys think that's fair, or a good deal, or a good...
I think it's fair.
Both sides agree to it.
I'm a big fan of American-style capitalism. You know, I bitch about Everton's money, but I think that,
Would you like to see Everton make a connection with that?
I would never, ever have some kind of salary cap or any regulation on what a team can and can't do, as long as it's, you know, not crooked. You know, if you want to make a partnership with another club, I mean, look what Everton's done with the MLS, you know, having the ability to go back and forth with Donovan. You know, we've had a couple other players, you know, try out for the team that, you know, Edson Buttle, wasn't quite up to par, gave it a little run. We've had some partnerships with some Spanish clubs that we've swapped players with. So, you know, I don't see anything wrong with that at all.
And one side, it worries me, though, because clubs like your QPR, will they ever get enough talent to establish connections with a club with the magnitude of Real or Barcelona? And could that... You said you obviously agree with the capitalism as far as money, but I'm afraid the gap could get so big.
I don't think it could get any bigger than it is right now.
Yeah, well, that's a good point, too. But will
City
it stay
has
like
unlimited
this?
Look at City. I mean, this is a team that was nothing until they had their new buyer, and they absolutely explode and win the Premier League. They have every right to do that.
PSG's doing that now.
Yeah, exactly. So, and look, Everton can't even pay their custodians, and they beat City.
Phil Neville was seen...
Six out of the last eight times. So, you know, I think that's part of the beauty of rooting for a club that I do. You know, you want to be pissed off and hate a club for how much money they have.
Well,
but at the same time, you have so many world-class players to where City cannot take all of the best players in the world. There are enough world-class players to where everyone can have world-class players.
Hayden made a comment 2 weeks ago along the lines of, you know, when West Ham's good, the EPL's good. And I could agree with that 100% because you want to see clubs like Everton, West Ham, some of those clubs that I'd like to see United finish eighth one year in the table. You know, I'd like to see...
Wouldn't we all?
True. A club with funds fall, and fall hard, to show that, you know, it's such a competitive league that nothing is set in stone. You're not going to have this top four that's set in stone.
Well, Chelsea did finish sixth, you know, but they did win the Champions League.
Yeah. It's the biggest joke of all time. But, you know, at the same time, Chelsea's the richest club in the world, and they got sixth in a league, finished one above the, you know, arguably the poorest club in the Premier League. So that's the beauty of the game. And like I said, there are enough players to go around. And that's another thing. You have a manager like David Moyes who can find players like that, who give players that start, and, you know, they can go from there. Look at, you know, where Arteta is right now. Moyes found him. He wasn't considered world-class at the time. Didn't pay him that much. Now he's playing for a top-four club, a Champions League club. So that's how, you know, those poor clubs are outlets for developing players and future stars. So, you know, that's just kind of the way things are.
I guess that's what concerns me. They're never able to hold on to talent.
Yeah.
Mostly. Thus allowing their club not to reach its potential.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Devin, for getting us off topic. Let me try to rope this back into being Liverpool. I just want to wrap it up by saying, you know, I loved how you got to see you got to hear these interviews with these players. I grew my support for Lucas, you know, him batting back from injury, then seeing him get injured again in the City game. You know, he's now one of my favorite players on the squad, and one of my goals in life now is to play Monopoly with him and Suarez sometime.
Yeah, and it makes you think about that alpaca from Peru that they hired to translate for Suarez. What does he do after this documentary? What do you know of any other prominent llamas in the world that he could possibly translate for?
It's maybe just the one from the Emperor's New Groove.
Emperor Cusco.
Cusco.
And on that note, I like your point because as an American fan, I'd like to
build relationships
and buy kids from players that I feel like I would like.
Right.
And so I think that's a very cool, I don't know, I'm very jealous. I wish they would do that for Spurs.
Let's stick with the topic of soccer in America. NBC, it was announced, they have won the rights to the Premier League for the next 3 seasons. This will be the last season that EPL games will be shown on Fox Soccer, at least until 2017. Let's, before we talk about the impact this will have on America, let's talk about the impact this will have on Fox Soccer. Right now, after this season, they'll have Champions League rights still. They'll have Europa, and they'll have FA Cup. And they've also got the Australian League, which they air at like midnight our time. Can Fox Soccer survive this?
Yes, I'd like to. It kind of makes me mad as a cable consumer because now you have to buy the Fox Sports package, and you wouldn't have to if Champions League wasn't on there still, but I think they'll be okay, but I think their numbers will drop significantly.
Yeah, you know, think about us. Would we have bought this package if we weren't as diehard general soccer fans? You know, if you had a particular club you wanted to watch in the EPL and you knew they weren't going to play on Fox Soccer, would you really go out of your way to buy an extra package? Maybe not. At this point, it's not basic cable. So it's, you know, to what extent, like, will their replays, their highlights, maybe a big thing for them could be their transfer drama coverage. You know, that could be something that could really step up their game.
Right. I could see them showing Sky Sports a lot
on
more
that,
hours.
Sky Sports.
And, you know, and look, as far as America goes, man, go after our national team, go after, you know, it's still MLS, but, you know, promote that better. I mean, that's really your only shot there if you lose these rights, because that's obviously the biggest draw.
You know, I think there were rumors that Fox was going to transform Fox Soccer into just their own personal Fox Sports channel, because you know they've got the Fox Sports Net, but those are only regional. This might be a good opportunity for them to just change Fox Soccer into a national sports.
It might be sports
show
for things. You know, obviously you'd have soccer on there. You could throw rugby on there. It'd be kind of its own little ESPN, the Ocho,
right,
type thing.
Right. Let's talk about what this means for American soccer viewers. I think this is nothing but positive. You know, I think, you know, NBC's already said they're going to air 18 to 20 games on NBC, the big network. You know, the majority of the games will be seen on NBC Sports Network, which that show, you know, you've got Bill Dance fishing right now.
Yeah.
This is
going to help him.
Right now, I think their highest rated shows right now are when they repeat Rocky III. They've also got, you know, F1 racing, which is kind of popular nationally, but let's forget about that. You know, we could see a thing where, you know, Fox Soccer on the last day of the season showed all of their games on every one of their different channels, like Speed and Fuel TV. With this deal, NBC Universal also owns the rights to USA, Bravo. We could see something like they did in the Olympics, where they show several different games, you know, getting these teams on, you know, basic cable. And I think it's nothing but a plus for Americans watching Premier League soccer.
Yeah, you know, and you said, what, 18 to 20 games? That's
on the major NBC.
So
there wouldn't be a game every week on the major network.
Well, I mean, there's 38, 37 weeks. Yeah.
But
so
there would be,
and I wonder why that is. What else is going on?
Surely they've something.
At that point in time, in the morning, I guess. I don't know.
Some of the NBC stations sell their time to, you know, religious programming on Sundays,
true,
stuff like that.
So, yeah.
And that's what we saw on Fox, you know, when Fox shows that. There's some national big markets that don't show Premier League because they sell
that
spot.
I wonder if, you know, will they take the 6 a.m. slot or will they take the 9?
I think those games will be on, you know, NBC Network. I think, the Saturday 11 a.m. games, you know, that's what will show.
And will this conflict with college football? Or will this be right? I guess the first college football game starts at 11, so maybe that would be about perfect transition.
Right, on NBC, yeah, you don't see a lot of 11 a.m. Notre Dame games, and those are the only ones they have. So they should be fine on that part. You know, and it won't interfere with NHL, A, because they've got a lockout, and B, just because of the time difference.
Yeah.
I
don't know. I like to see that, you know, a big network is wanted to have those rights, is competing for those slots. I hope that it's sufficient coverage. I hope it's just not
a
moneymaker. And I hope, more than anything, my biggest concern is what's going to happen to Ian Dark.
Well, that's the thing. ESPN now, the last time they bid for rights, they went in with Fox Soccer. Fox Soccer won the majority. They subleased 80 or so games to ESPN. ESPN right now, they've got the next Euros and the next World Cup. Ian Dark has said he will be with ESPN until the 2014 World Cup, so you won't see him on NBC the first two. It's really sad that, you know, this probably means the end for soccer coverage for a while on ESPN, because they'll have some international friendlies, but you won't see much. It'll be interesting to see once Ian Dark's contract is up, if NBC goes for hire, maybe Fox, because Fox, even though they've lost this, they won the World Cup rights in 2018 and 2022, so it'll be interesting to see how much they, you know, continue their mainstream soccer coverage.
Two things stand out to me about this. First thing is, I do think it'll overall benefit soccer in America. I think it will grow by this move. But second, why did ESPN and Fox give this up so easy? Why?
They weren't in the bid for very long. It just seemed like they all just flopped.
From early on in the bidding process, they were not competitive. So I just wonder why, because I think it did benefit their networks. So I don't know what direction they want to head in if they're not heading in this direction.
Yeah, I don't know the actual bid that Fox and ESPN.
I think Grant Wall for ESPN reported upwards of $25 million.
Right, but ESPN's was, or NBC's was substantially higher than that, and it was actually compared to the bid that Fox won when they won their original Premier League rights. It was three times that. So, you know, it looks like NBC's, hopefully they're dedicated in, you know,
yes.
They've got Arlo White and Kyle Martino.
Sure.
I'm sure they'll do the same thing that Fox Soccer did, where they'll just have the English commentators on most of the games, but have those guys like ESPN does with Ian Dark and Steve McManaman on the big games.
And on a positive note, NBC seems to do a good job with international sports.
Right.
So this is a positive too.
Right. All right. Let's move on to the Ballon d'Or. The nominees are out. Emmanuel Adebayor, Brad Friedel. Oh, wait, sorry, that's the Tottenham roster. How could I have confused that? Let's go over them. You've got Sergio Aguero, Xabi Alonso, Mario Balotelli, Karim Benzema, Buffon from Italy, Sergio Busquets, Iker Casillas, Ronaldo, Drogba, Falcao, Ibrahimovic, Iniesta, Messi, Manuel Neuer, Bayern's goalkeeper, Neymar, Mesut Ozil, Gerard Piqué, Andrea Pirlo, Sergio Ramos, Wayne Rooney, Yaya Toure, Robin Van Persie, and Xavi. I want each of y'all's top three. Who do you predict? And look, I think we can all say that, well, maybe not. It'll be interesting to see. For me, I guess I'll go ahead and go first. My top three, Messi, Ronaldo. Third one's kind of hard. You could give it to a lot of people. But this time, man, I really, you know, this might surprise you. I kind of want to give third to Drogba.
Very surprising.
But I think I'm going to have to give it to Xavi instead, just because of not only his performance in Barcelona, but for Spain in the Euro.
I was going to say that. I think Euro had a big influence on this short list.
That's the only reason Balotelli's on here, and Buffon, yes, and Pirlo, in my opinion.
And the only reason I wouldn't say Drogba is his age and not an EPL competition anymore. And I don't know how competitive the Ivory Coast is.
This is over, like, the past year. So, right. I mean, he could. I said, you know, I'm sure he'll get some votes.
But I'm with you on this one. Ronaldo and Messi have such a strong start. It's hard to see them not between them two once again. I'm surprised at how many goalkeepers are on this short list. Right. But if I had to give you one more, I would go with Zlatan, simply because I think he's going to flourish at PSG. And if you see them go far, I just think it's going to help his case.
I'm going to go Messi, Ronaldo, and Van Persie.
Really? Yeah. You know, obviously Van Persie had a great season for Arsenal last year, and that's why he's on here. Maybe not as great with the Netherlands in Euro. But,
you know, you think, you know, the Netherlands, as poorly as they played, you know, who was their only offense?
That's true.
I would say Van Persie.
Yeah, Van der Vaart.
Schneider. Dirk Kuyt.
Schneider.
If you haven't seen the YouTube video of the two-year-old that can recite the entire Netherlands roster, go YouTube that right now. Let me ask you this. This might be a sign of the times, but there's only one English player on this list, and that's Wayne Rooney.
I almost feel like that's consolation. I don't think he's going to compete for it.
Right. I mean, do you think this is just England's not producing as many as they used to be, or just the other? This is just a great year for the other countries.
England's not producing as many as it used to be.
I mean, I can't even think of. I mean, would you put Joe?
English men are just
if I had to, I would maybe put Joe. I would maybe put Joe Hart on here.
Yeah, I would put with the other keepers on that list. I think Joe Hart's a world class keeper, and he's you know, as good. As any keeper in the world. So, yeah, I would have put Joe Hart on there before I'd put Rooney.
Yeah, I'd say Joe Hart definitely sticks out. But I just feel like these offensive players are in a different class than the one England's producing right now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Jermaine Defoe, Steven Gerrard. They're in their
England's
in their level.
Aren't their strikers.
They're not those players. And that's evident at the Euros. And they're just in a little different class. I mean, it's kind of disheartening to see that, but that's the truth.
We've got, you know... a South American in Falco from Colombia, some Africans, mainly this is all from Europe. Yeah, you ever think we'll see a day where we see an American on this list?
Let's hope so. I'm trying to think.
I don't think any of them are alive right now.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the only thing I can see is if Altidore's career just takes off, you know.
Yeah. That would be the only one in a sick jokes fantasy
in
world.
The immediate future.
Right.
Yeah, obviously Altidore has the potential to score goals. He's doing well in the Dutch league.
And he's young.
He's still, what, he's 22?
Yeah.
He's still got plenty of time to develop. Look at how Dempsey's blown up. If I would say Dempsey, but he's 29 years old now.
Yeah. He's probably reached the height of his career.
Yeah, he has. And look at where he's peaked. So if we could get Altidore into that competition, you know, Dempsey didn't start his, you know, professional career till very late on, and didn't move to the EPL till what, he was 25.
Right.
So, you know, Altidore's already at that competition, has been for a couple years. So, and you know, he's scoring goals right now. He scored more than he did last year. He's improving internationally. You know, there's some question marks there between, you know, him and Klinsmann. So, I think the international play has a lot to do with this too, so they're gonna get that all figured out too. But yeah, Altidore is the only one I can think of that I've seen play. You know, there's obviously no one on our Olympic team that was that good. I think, you know, the biggest American stars we have right now.
If you had to put somebody on there right now, if there was a requirement to put someone from the U.S., I guess you'd probably put Dempsey.
Best American player.
Yes. But if you look, if you put him against all these guys, he doesn't. I mean, he doesn't compare.
He doesn't compare to those, and that's not cool, but, I mean, it's just the truth, and I don't see Altidore being on there. His inconsistency has been kind of, I don't know.
Let's move on to predictions for this week's games. Obviously, the big game of the week, Arsenal at Man United. Unpredictable Arsenal visiting Old Trafford. You know, my heart says Man U is going to win this game. But my head thinks that maybe Arsenal, you know, pulls something out up their sleeve. I don't know the expression. I just don't know what this Arsenal team, but seeing Man U play at home, I'm going to say 2-1 Man United.
I think it's going to be a better game than people think. You have two roller coasters going against each other. I think it hurts my soul to its core to say this, but I'd say Arsenal pulls it out 3-2.
Zach?
It also hurts my soul to the burning core, the deepest part of my inner soul, to say that there will be a 2-2 draw. And it hurts my soul because there will be a streaker that runs onto the field, is aggressive towards an officer who is beaten with a club, has epilepsy, and the cameras are flashing, and the man dies on the field. And it hurts my soul to think that all of this was because of how bad the unions are in England.
Right.
Right.
Thank you for that.
And the odds of that happening are 1,000,000 to 1, so I expect a high payout when it happens.
Moving on. Everton at Fulham. Toffees trying to get back in the win column at Craven Cottage. Not an easy place to play. I love Craven Cottage. Side note, I think it's, you know, a cool little state. I'd love to go visit it someday.
I've read it's one of the best there in the country.
Mainly because...
Port size.
Mainly because I'd like to visit, because mainly every time Liverpool plays, you know, they usually get like 4 or 5 goals. But nevertheless, I'd go see any game there at Fulham. I think it's a cool stadium. But let's focus on the game. Everton at Fulham. I say Everton take care of business. Let's go 2-0.
You're going to go 2-0.
Kevin Morales is...
Morales had a really good game last game.
Her.
He did twist his ankle, kept playing. We took him out, I think, more of his precaution.
Right.
And just because he wasn't going to be 100% right after that. You know, I've twisted plenty of ankles, and I know, you know, exactly that type of injury to where you can play. You'll be fine in about a week, but, you know, it's just you're not going to be full speed for the next hour. So, yeah, I can see why they did that, and I'm not worried. Moyes is optimistic, full recovery type thing. And I think, yeah, hopefully, like I said, Darren Gibson is healthy for this one. I think we take care of business. And I'll probably go 2-0 too.
Everton TCB?
Quick question for Zach. Is Fellaini and Pienaar going to play?
Pienaar will. Fellaini, yes, Fellaini's healthy.
Okay. In that case, Berbatov nets 1 or 2, but Everton nets more. I'd say Everton wins 3-2, but Berbatov, whatever his name is, he scores.
Wow, you're all about the 3-2s. Let's see you on Chelsea at Swansea. I don't think this should be any problem for Chelsea. Michu's obviously great, but couldn't really do anything against City. I kind of see the same against Chelsea. 4-1 Chelsea.
Both teams like to hold the ball. They like possession. Which team can do it better? Probably Chelsea, which I think... I don't think they'll win this one easily, but really? I do think they'll win. I think they'll sneak this out low scoring, but like a 1-0 game.
I'm going to go with 3-2 Swans. My upset pit of the week.
Okay. To White Hart Lane, Wigan, the visitors. This one again, you know, a lot of these games. I'm gonna go Spurs 1-0 with Dempsey getting the winner.
I'd like to see Spurs string together some good results. I don't see why Wigan could throw a wrench in this. Especially with Dembele probably coming back.
Barring any catastrophic injury in the Capital One Cup game, I see Tottenham take care of
it. I agree. We're one of those clubs like Arsenal and Everton that can be inconsistent at times. It'd be very bitter to lose at this point. So, yeah, I'm going to go with 2-0, and I'm going to go with Jermaine Defoe and Gareth Bale scoring.
Oh, yeah. I might should have prolonged my upset pick of the week. I'm not going to go with a victory here for Wigan, but I'm going to go with a draw. I'm going to go with a 2-2 draw again.
Roberto Martinez, thanks you.
Depending on if they start slow Loris or Benedict Friedel, I'll probably go with the Friedel mistake in goal if he starts, and that's going to be the catalyst for this game.
I'm going to be honest. I think the only way Spurs lose this is if there's a catastrophic bus event on their way to the White Hart Lane.
Wow. Way to jinx your team. Manchester City at West Ham. The Hammer's probably going to want to take 3 points out of this. I'm going to say this is my upset pick of the week. Andy Carroll nets the winner for the Hammers 2-1.
If Suarez doesn't eat all of Andy Carroll's horse feed, then, you know, I think I could see Carroll netting a couple goals and... as long as they don't let him get into the feed, I think that the Hammers have a good chance to win this game.
Now, what? It's Hammers in the City?
Yes. Yeah, at West Ham. That's a hard place to play.
Yeah. Disappointing
to
see.
I'm going to go 2-1 West Ham.
Right. Disappointing to see Hammers lose this last week. So, with that being said, Aiden's pushing the Kool-Aid my way, and I guess I'm going to drink
it. Dr. Barclay sipping it, passing it on to Devin. Touchdown, West Ham.
I think...
3-2?
No. I'm going to go with 1-0.
I almost went there, but I like a good... I want a good scoring game. And finally, to Anfield. Liverpool welcoming Newcastle. Future Liverpool striker Dembaba getting to see what kind of conditions he'll get to play in for the second half of the season. Once again, Liverpool have a game on Wednesday. Halloween against Swansea, barring any catastrophic injury. I'm going to say Liverpool with a 1-0 victory. I take that back. I'm going to say a 2-1 victory because I forgot that Pepe Reina probably won't play again, leaving Brad Jones with his fourth consecutive start, which at some point he had the 2 clean sheets, then he gave up 2 goals against Everton. I expect him to have a decent game against Swansea, but, it's Dembaba and Cisse. They're just a lethal strike force, and no, it's really hard for any keeper or any defense to stop them.
I agree. You saw that in the second half, whenever they played Everton, whenever those two came in. They work great together. They're freak athletes. And one thing I think that a lot of people don't think about is the fact that in Dembaba's home village, alpaca is considered a fine meat. And when he gets on the pitch at Anfield, I don't think there's any question that he's going to be after Suarez, and they're going to go in there, and they're going to try to steal 3 points. And, they came to Everton.
Let's watch out for that post-game handshake, I guess.
Yes, exactly. and pre-game, just to get started off, is
true.
As far as the score line goes, honestly, I don't know what to expect with either one of these teams. The Newcastle game that I watched most closely was when they played Everton. They had some breaks with... disallowed goals, offside goals, and such. But at the same time, their offense played well. Cisse, Dembaba are on the top of their game. They could go in there and win that. At the same time, I think they're very inconsistent. I think that they can end up losing big. So I don't know. I guess I'm going to go I guess I'm going to play it safe and go with a draw here. I'm going to go with a 2-2 draw.
It'd be interesting. I think it's going to depend on Rodgers' back four, who he selects. Glenn Johnson will be back, but it'll be interesting to see if he puts him at the left and puts Andre Wisdom in the right at the right back spot. Who knows?
I'm going to go with Liverpool 2-1. I think Liverpool's going to start stringing together a bunch of good results. I see them, like I said, finishing top seven at least. And better than that, really.
Okay. It's Halloween. First of all, what's your guys' favorite Halloween or horror film movie? For me, I'm not a big scary movie guy. I'll watch them. I'd rather much watch a comedy, which is why I'm picking Beetlejuice. Classic.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and go with a film that's not just a favorite Halloween film for me. I've almost got every word memorized. I think it's just a masterful film. I'm going to go with Human Centipede. It's a family film. It's something I grew up watching. And, I'll probably watch it a couple times this week, so.
I'm going to be honest.
If you do not say what I think you're going to say, I'll be very shocked.
My childhood growing up, I fell in love with the movie Hocus Pocus. But as far as scare me, leave me trickling in my pants, I saw The Last Exorcism, and let me tell you, changed the way I sleep.
I would have thought you would have said Harry Potter, because they always incorporate...
That's magical, they always, more Christmassy
they,
to
but
me.
They, no, they incorporate... there was Chamber
the
Secrets.
The witchcraft that's, involved with Harry Potter isn't quite as hardcore as The Exorcism, I'd say.
That's the thing. I think Harry Potter, I don't classify it as Halloween, because it's been a movie I watch year-round. So, I wouldn't say it's my favorite Harry Potter movie. Favorite movies?
That's kind of like daytime TV for Satan. It's it's not that hardcore. That's prime time is The Exorcism.
Okay, scariest player in soccer. I'll start, and I'm going to be totally biased here. Martin Skrtel.
Oh,
the guy just they don't call him the Terminator for nothing.
He has a demeanor about him that is.
You don't want to catch him in the back alley.
No, I don't.
Add Daniel Agger, and you're running the other way.
Now that you mentioned Liverpool's back four is a little more scary than I thought, I guess.
Yeah, it's a pretty scary crew. what I'm thinking here, but at the same time, I'm not really scared of that type of animal. They're kind of a goofy animal, long neck, they spit, they're just ugly, awful. Llamas are just... They're just llamas. They're kind of comical. So he's not scary to me. If I had to, there's a couple I could choose from. I could go with Lescott very easily just because he looks like a clown with mange. But I'm going to have to go with Frank Weebly because he's so scary and he has that scar and he's fast and just...
Oh, wow. Well,
great points on all that. Maybe not the alpaca part.
I agree with you too. You got Rebrew, who looks like the Hunchback of Notre Dame. You got Lescott, who looks like Frankenstein. And then but for me, I'm going to go with the culmination of personality, looks, everything. And for me, it's going to have to be someone with the likes, Jonas Kabul. No, if not him, I'd say, realistically, probably a German player. Those guys come off as pretty, like a Schweinsteiger?
Schweinsteiger, yeah. I was thinking, Puyo's not the most pleasant-looking guy in the world.
Maybe he's a Klose? Like, I don't know.
Now, if you were to dress up as a world soccer character for Halloween, I've thought about this long and hard. And, my costume would be pretty easy. I'd go as Howard Webb, and, I'd just knock on our friend Drew Peterson's door, ask to borrow one of his Man United jerseys, and I'm all set.
And shave your head. I would probably, go with it'd be a multi-costume, because I could be Buffon, and I could be the maid from Mr. Deeds at the same time. But then I could get a llama suit.
I was
an actual llama from the Gentry Zoo.
My first thought for you was, get the two-person horse costume, throw a West Ham jersey on there, and you've got a great Carroll costume.
You could be Andy Carroll. Yeah, there's a number of things you could do. You could be David Moyes / Gollum from Lord of the Rings. You could be Harry Redknapp and Droopy Dog. You could be Tevez and Sloth and the Goonies. So there's a number of different ways you could go here.
My first thought turned to one of those controversial players, Balotelli. I don't know how you would do his costume without totally altering your hair. So he's, because his personality is so vibrant, my thoughts turn to him.
Just carry around fireworks.
Act like a complete numbnuts all night. But I think that if you wanted people to recognize you at your local Halloween party as a soccer player, maybe put a sleeve on your arm and go as Clint Dipsy and try to act hard all night.
And ask people,
who am I? And they'll say,
and then they say something and you tell them, that's what's up. And those are the only three words you can speak all night and for the rest of your time in Clint Dempsey character.
You could go as Zidane and just headbutt everybody around.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, let's our final segment of the program, one of my favorites, our pop culture time. Let's start, of course, with The Walking Dead.
Quick recap of it.
Welcome to Woodbury. You know, this episode reminded me...
You're not guests here, or you're not... Prisoners,
your guests. This episode reminded me of Lost when they introduced the others that were on the other side of the island for a while. You did not see Rick and the gang. This was a Governor and Andrea and Michonne centered episode. They had shown the promo for the helicopter crashing for weeks, mm-hmm. and you were just wondering when they were finally going to show that in the episode. Well, you finally do. You realize it's the U.S. Army, and they crash. Andrea and Michonne are walking. When they see the crash, they go over to check it out. They quickly realize that the governor, the new character, in his ragtag group, find them. I think Andrea and Michonne were the only ones to get the last ones to get the news flash that everyone turns and that everyone's infected. I did not expect Michonne's pets to get axed like they did, considering she's, you know, carried these guys around forever, and they're useful. They carry all her weapons. They can't bite her, but obviously she had to blow their cover, but that ended up getting, blown by Merle. Yeah. What's everyone's thoughts on the governor? Is this guy just, you know... I knew...
At first, I would say I was kind of pissed off at Michonne because it seemed like, you know, he was being so nice to him, letting him in, giving him a place to stay. You know, at this point in time in this world, what else could you ever hope for besides a safe community that looks like the real world that you used to live in? And then obviously, he goes in there and kills the whole platoon, the army, and then you see at the end of the show, and he's sitting in a room full of fish tanks with heads in it. So, at this point, I think I've developed sort of a negative feeling for the governor. I think that's a little bit weird, and obviously, it's a sick joke that he massacred the whole army, so... Yeah, I don't like the governor one bit, and I hope that Rick kills him in the face with a machete like he did Ibrahimovic.
Honestly, I'm more interested in Woodbury than the prison. I think bigger things are in work here. I hope they are setting the stage for a big showdown between the governor and Rick. Sure, the governor may have shown he is a dirtbag in this last episode, but let's see where it takes us. A lot of mystery shrouded among those heads in the fish tanks. And I'm curious to see which character will be dispensed next.
You know, I love the fact that they had in another, you know, setting like Woodbury. But I my money is on Michonne to get, you know, the final katana blade to the governor. Because... I think it was interesting to see that quote where Andrea said, you know, that Michonne said nothing about her life before the walkers took over, and, you know, Andrea's, you know, just an open book to her. I think that you have two people on two different sides of the spectrum. Andrea, who, you know, wants that community again like she had at the farm with the whole group, in Michonne, who it seems like she is just a person that wants to be out. She wants this new life is suited for her to be out in the wild. And she doesn't like it that they've got her knife. And she's, you know, that piercing stare she gets. She doesn't even have to say anything.
No, she does not have to say anything. She's mad because they stole her katana.
I agree. I hope they develop her character even more and we get to know her. I'd be very disappointed to see her die in the next episode
or two.
Yeah,
she dies. I see it.
I love where you went.
Who's going to kill her? She's got
the governor, if he suspects that might, she is a threat.
I guarantee you. He already sees her as a threat.
Yes. Definitely. And I think, I agree with Hayden. She'll either save Andrea from a sticky situation or governor is her undoing and says you're too big of a threat. And the governor proceeds to kill Andrea. I don't know.
You know, Andrea is obviously, she's fallen. I can see her falling head over heels for the governor.
Yeah,
she's going to get just destroyed from behind by the governor.
But there was a naked chick in the governor's bed in the last scene. Who knows?
No.
And is the governor trying to save his wife and daughter?
No.
It's not her because she's got different hair than the woman in the picture, his wife. Yeah, I told you guys, I thought it was going to be like Arnold Schwarzenegger's Mr. Freeze. We were going to see their bodies like frozen in water. But no, you just see heads.
That is the most exciting part of the series I've seen so far, is a scientific person is looking for, we think, a cure? He's looking for something in these zombies.
We have the guy at the CDC.
True, but this guy seems a little bit more progressive, if you will.
Yeah, but the guy at the CDC was very clear saying that there's no cure. Now, he was also drunk down there, which...
I'm going slightly insane, but, you know, where else is this entire Earth could you hope to find a cure?
And look at what the African native did with her pets. She found a way to tame them.
African native?
And, you know, I just think that there will be something very progressive as dealing with the cure of this disease or a betterment of it in this before the season's over.
Well, if there's anyone to find a cure for this disease, I don't think it is Milton, the, you know, lackey for the governor.
Yeah, and one thing I found interesting was that he said that they are starving just slower than us. So at some point, do all of these things die off and you can kind of, you know, not have as much chaos?
Well, gosh, how long does it take him to starve?
Right.
Yeah. A year?
I don't know. I mean, they've already went through the winter, so it's been a while.
And they have not, obviously, consumed anything. I mean, she didn't, like, feed just their throat, I don't believe.
Right.
I don't know. I hope something significant is about those fish tanks in the heads. I hope that they're working towards something shocking and surprising.
He's obviously wanting to keep them for some, you know,
for some
to
reason.
See if, you know, they can possibly...
Well, and he took the soldier's head, too.
Right.
That was just alive and put in there.
Which leads me to believe maybe it's a head fascination more than a zombie thing, because the soldier was not turned.
No,
I don't believe
recovering,
so.
Yeah.
And then he killed him, obviously.
Right. He told the governor said he was going to go save his little buddies, which when I saw that, you know, it didn't... I did not see, you know, all his army coming out of nowhere and shooting the soldiers. That was kind of surprising. I kind of thought something was going to happen, you know, to where he, you know, slyly took over them for some reason. I did not. That came out of nowhere for me. You know, are there chickens at Woodbury? The governor was cooking eggs. I don't know the food supply there, but there were eggs at breakfast. That was interesting to see. Merle is back, and I thought this was going to be a bigger thing, but it doesn't seem like it actually is, because it just seems he's like another lackey for the governor,
yeah.
Which is surprising, because his character doesn't seem like someone that would become a lackey,
yeah.
But maybe it's the loss of the hand, and that the governor, you know, was kind to him and helped him out.
I don't see him playing a big role down the road. I say that, but watch him, like, murder Rick or something.
Yeah, I see him playing a huge role.
It will be very interesting to see, because eventually you know that Rick and the gang are going to find Woodbury.
I think...
It's got to be close to the prison.
I think Merle kills the governor, eventually. I think there's some kind of conflict, like, do I choose my brother over the governor? And I think he kills the governor. Maybe he dies in the act. I can see that happening, but, you know.
See, I see the governor executing Merle when they arrive. I don't know.
I can see a scenario where the governor asks Merle to, you know,
spy.
Yeah, use Daryl to spy. And it'll be interesting to see that, you know, their relationship given Merle's absence and whether Daryl is loyal to Merle or he, you know, sticks with Rick and the group, given that everything.
Yeah, and I guess we're assuming that Rick eventually finds this place.
Yeah, it's got to be. It's in Georgia, so it's got to be close to the prison.
It's got to be close. But
which now I'm wondering if that was anyone from Woodbury, that, you know, that scene in the episode before where Carol is trying to perform the practice, the C-section on the walker, and you saw somebody in the bushes. Was that somebody from that group? Which makes you think, if it was, why didn't they just go and take him out then?
And we're also assuming that Rick finds him at Woodbury. What if the governor goes to the prison? And I don't know. Maybe the community of Woodbury gets breached and overran. I don't know how that would happen. And then they look and find the prison, and a war happens there. I don't know. I can see that too.
Well,
it happened at the farm.
Because why would Rick leave the prison if they have what they have?
Exactly, and it's theirs. They spill blood.
It looks like next week is going to be back to Rick and the gang with, you know, they've got those other two prisoners there. It looks like my money's that at least one of them will be gone, because it looks like tensions are already starting to rise on there. But, you know, it might not be next episode where we see the governor and governor's group and Rick's group finally meet, but that'll be very interesting to see when it comes along. Finally. Big news out today. The Disney Corporation, has bought Lucasfilm. I believe it was $4 billion, you know. But that's not the big news. The big news is that it has been announced that Star Wars Episode 7, you know, which has long been a joke about, you know, something that would never probably happen,
ever.
Is actually happening. And is coming out in 2015.
This is,
your thoughts, Zach?
I am pleased because, as far as the story behind... why are the Star Wars movies so great? The characters, the complete... there's nothing like it as far as, like, the Jedi, the Force, the lightsabers. That's really the big thing. It's not some deep plot, really. And you have unlimited plot scenarios because it's an entire universe in a galaxy far, far away. So wherever they want to go with this, they can go. And I think that as long as you don't come back and rape it like they did Indiana Jones, I'm very excited. I'll just have to see who's the director, who's the cast. I mean,
yeah, surely Harrison Ford can't be coming back as Han Solo.
Gosh, how awesome would that be? Wow.
I look at the pros and cons. Pros. Unlike the last three that were made, we don't know where it's going to end. We don't know what's going to happen. You know, with these three was eventually going to happen, which sucked, because you're like, great, Mace Windu's going to die. When's it going to happen? Great, Anakin's going to get, you know.
Could they possibly go with, like, a prelude?
I don't know. Here's the thing.
Great question.
Darth Vader's dead.
Yes.
The Emperor's dead.
Yes.
All has been restored in the galaxy.
So, are we looking at another Sith Lord coming back? Sick joke.
How are they going to restart the Jedi Order?
Is Luke going to go bad?
My first thought would be to go with, because you can't use any of the same actors, you go with an old Luke teaching new young people to where you could start a new series.
But what's the issue there? Where do they spark up a plot is my question. What antagonist is... I just don't see how they're going to be original with this.
Yeah, but you can create an antagonist because it's not an entire universe. There are remnants of the Empire, surely, that...
And I am worried about the fact Disney has it. Because films I've seen lately that have been good, I look at Batman series, has been awesome. I think this new James Bond will be awesome. But what makes him awesome? A darker kind of feel to them. The Batman series had a very dark and almost realistic feel. Will they say, we're going to be just as dark? But I don't think they will be. I think it'll cost them. I don't think it'll be as good because
My favorite Star Wars was that the last one they made, and it was the darkest one.
Yes.
So I agree with Batman. Why was it so good? Because it was just such a real dark feeling. And I'm trying to think if anything Disney has done lately that
I know I can't. Put it, I can't think. Of
I it. Think they did a great job with Pirates of the Caribbean.
But that's still, I get a different vibe.
Here's the thing: they're not going to label this as a Disney movie. It's still going to be Lucasfilm.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, Pixar is Pixar, and they also own Miramax, which is
right.
Exactly. Which is what they do. They're not going to throw Mickey Mouse in there and give him a lightsaber. They're going to keep it
correct.
Yeah, they're going to keep it the same people they've organized, just not George.
Gosh, Lucas. I just would have wished that, I don't know, someone besides Disney would have got it. But and on the same note, it's a great financial move. Whether it's bad, good, corny, sucky, everyone's going to go see it. Now you
can open up Star Wars Rise of Disney World.
Yeah, and everyone's going to go see it.
We can only hope that in Episode 7, there's a pod racing scene.
Well, if you look at the sound effects, they're able to... I've heard numerous people hate on the first episode. I agree. Hopefully they have something original like the pod racing scene.
Well, we've got 3 years to speculate, dissect. I'm sure the rumors will start immediately.
I don't know if I'll be able to handle films that year with the revamp of a Batman series, Avengers 2, and new Star Wars.
There's going to be a new Batman series that year?
I believe so. I think the license agreement is 3 years.
Not to mention the third Hobbit.
Sure.
We'll have to get Drew Peterson on that, and by that for time, some fact checking.
Will probably be relegated, so we have a lot of time in your hands too.
On that note, I think this was a great stopping point. Great show, guys. Zach Smith, Devin Cook, thank you for being here. Let's throw out your Twitter handles really quick so people can follow you.
Devin W. Cook, a lot of Spurs tweets.
At Vern Lundquist _.
Where are we at right now? Are we close to the 4-digit mark? We're inching closer and closer. Inching
closer to 4 digits. You can always follow my personal account, I suppose, at zsmith001. Hasn't been as active lately. I kind of forgot that I have an actual Twitter account. I spend most of my time on the other one.
Understandable.
Yes.
And don't forget to follow the show at Stoppage Time Pod. You can email us, stoppagetimepodcast@gmail.com. You can download the show on iTunes, Stoppage Time with Hayden Herrera. Like I said, like us on Facebook, or download the show on Podomatic, stoppagetimepodcast.podomatic. That's podomatic.com. Quick and easy if you want to just listen from your desktop there, if you don't want to download the whole episode, which we understand. So, you know, if you're stuck in your apartment on the East Coast waiting for
Hurricane Sandy to leave the premises.
Yeah, I just thought of that. That's gonna
water in your basement.
Sandy's really gonna hurt our viewership. Hopefully, these people stuck in their apartments have Wi-Fi available.
Yeah, I think we have a couple million viewers of ours that are on the East Coast. So shout out to all our millions of viewers on the East Coast, and I wish you guys a quick recovery. Hopefully Governor Christie and the President work as well as they have been, and we're able to get that aid to you folks out there. So you know, hopefully wherever you're listening to this, you're safe, and you're
staying away from those sharks.
You've got really good insurance, and everything's going to be okay.
Speaking of next week, we usually tape these on Tuesdays, but next Tuesday in America is kind of a big day, so we might have to reschedule this. But we will have an episode next week, regardless. So until then, for Devin Cook and Zach Smith, I'm Hayden Herrera, and we'll see you next time.